There's a lot of different, I guess you could say, smart features, safety aspects that you can do to a cranes. And each one of those has a variable in pricing, right? And everybody has caviar dreams until they find out how much it costs.
For your own safety, you are reminded to stand behind the yellow line.
How much do safety systems really cost? Welcome to Safety Factor, my name is Ben. Today we're gonna talk about what the real cost of safety is, you know, how much those systems cost that you're gonna pay for, so you can get a better idea of how much you might expect to pay as you try to make your workplace safer. Gentlemen, you mind introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your background in the industry?
Chris Ross, I've been with Mozilla 2 years. Was formerly in the graphite electro business for a dozen years, and then had a steel making background with a steel producer for 20 years.
Jim Warren, director of steel segment, almost 30 years in the industry, 9 years in a mill, the rest of it on overhead cranes.
Lance White, director of sales specialist, 20 years in the industry, started out in below the hook slings and rigging, in the last 15 or so in overhead cranes.
So how many times has a customer asked you guys to make it safe, and then when you give the, when it comes time to sign the check, they start backing off a little bit?
A lot.
What does the customer mean when they say make it safe?
Oh, geez. So there's a lot of different, I guess you could say, smart features, safety aspects that you can do to a cranes. And each one of those has a variable in pricing, right? And everybody has caviar dreams until they find out how much it costs, right? So yes, they want to make them safe. Yes, they want to make them reliable, right? But when they find out how much that safety actually costs, sometimes they back off from it. And I can't tell you how many times it's, yes, I want to do this. Yes, I want the Cadillac. Yes, I want everything, right? And then you give them the price and they say, oh, well, what can we do to get it, you know, half price, right? So,
yeah, what corners can we cut to make it more manageable, right? Still safe, but make it more cost effective.
Yeah, I think when safety and features are considered and thought about as in design phase, usually when the engineers are designing the piece of equipment that they want to procure. And then once we provide a cost for that, it's one reason that, you know, you see it, they request that all the features be on separate line items, right? So they know where they can go and pick and choose. But I just think safety is considered more on the front end and design phase than it is once it makes it to the accounting side of the business.
So why is it? Why is safety mandated up until it's time to sign the check, and then you start peeling off those safety features as you go?
Every project, capital expenditure or not, starts with a budget, right? An approved budget, and you got to work within that budget. Now, to answer why are safety features some of the first to be plucked? I don't know that I can answer that. I would say that, you know, if you're not within budget, you're probably not going to get it at all. So I think that's just,
well, if you think about it though, too, right? So every crane is designed, we'll use cranes as an example, right? So every crane is designed as with safety factors, right? Whether it's a regular production or hot metal, right? They have different safety designs already built into them. So they're inherently designed as being safe pieces of equipment. Everything that we would do additionally to them makes them more safer, right? So that's why they're able to look at it and start peeling some of that onion back and saying, okay, well, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to manage, you know, the budget and still pull all of these additional safety features into it. So they start pulling some of that back.
Crane's an inherently dangerous object, but engineered to be safe already.
Correct.
Yeah, and so they start peeling off the extra features.
And then there's also baselines, right? So as far as safety concerns are laid out, you know, the first thing you want to try and do is eliminate any safety issues, right? If you can't eliminate safety issues, then you put in equipment that will kind of deter that safety risk. And then from there, if you can't deter it, then you actually have to put procedures in place to try and help mitigate it, right? So there's that level of each step that you can take. Now, when you get down to the point to where you're just making procedures and policies, it doesn't cost anything.
You know, I think one thing that could lend to this is a lot of the safety features that you see on cranes are new features. You know, the first cranes would go north and south, and a hoist would run east and west, and a hook would run up and down, right? And then along came different types of brakes and drives and you know, overload protection and interfacing and, you know, collision avoidance and all these other things. We operated a long time before those things were ever created. And so one of the things I believe that you see happening is you create a budget, you get a price for this piece of equipment that has all the features, and then that price is above your budget. And so where are you gonna cut? And you can justify maybe cutting out this feature, but still maintain a level of safety by providing additional training to your operators, right? And so I think that's probably to answer your initial question, why is that? I think that's probably one thing that lends to that, I would say.
So let's talk about some of the options that are out there. So we don't have to just stick to cranes. We could talk about, you know, Alevia hooks, no-touch tools, things like that. What are the safety options that are out there? And then how much can someone expect to pay for some of these different safety options, like, you know, at a percentage of their initial cost?
I know that we've been doing a lot of work lately with the Alevias in the steel industry, which is a great tool, a great option for steel producers. It allows no-touch operation, right? So you get into the features of it, and I tell everybody it's kind of like buying a car, right? You can add as many options as you want on it, load cells, laser traceability on the ground, remotes with different options. I think that's a great start. And so people can look at, see what like Lance said, on certain items, give me, break out every line item for it. And then we really want to do this, but what can I whittle away to make this happen?
I mean, you go from a 5 up to, 100 ton. And like he was just saying, every single one of those hooks, there's the two different models, right? Every one of those hooks, you have different, we'll say, features, right, that you can add to and take away. There's, like he said, lasers and load cells. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can add to it.
There's a wide range of pricing and cost associated to those things. But, you know, just talking, one that may resonate with a lot of people that's very simple is, you know, I remember when I first got into this business that one of the first things we would go in and try to sell would be a remote system, you know, a radio control, so that you can disconnect from the crane itself. You don't have that pendant hanging off the crane. And, you know, the first thing you got when a customer said no was number one, they'll lose my transmitters. They'll leave them on the back of a truck, or they'll, you know. And number two, well, what if it goes down? Then I'm stuck. And then, you know, what you have to explain to them is, you know, you can wrap that thing up and there's a selector switch up there. You still don't lose the pendant, you know. And by the way, you know, a new transmitter, depending on which one you got, if it's just a simple radio, it could be $300-$400. Plus you get two with the system, right? So, I mean, you can put a simple radio control system on a standard crane, as long as there's nothing really special, for $2,500 all in. You know, that's installed and everything. And depending on which brand you go with, it could be anywhere from $400 to $800 for a replacement transmitter, something like that. So just to kind of put some numbers with a simple feature that is pretty common, I think that would probably be the first one that would come to mind for me.
What other systems are out there?
Well, a lot of the things that we're doing now are different types of spreader beams, right? They're multi-beams. Getting employees out of harm's way. So a lot of the mills, when they do shipping, right? So they're either doing shipping into a barge or by rail, any of those things, right? So what we're actually doing is we're getting these beams that the operators are able to switch in and out of between, whether it be a single magnet or eight magnets. It doesn't matter, right? Depending on the length of the material that they're picking up, they can go and switch those out without having to have a maintenance personnel come in, switch over, you know, moving D-rings and power cords and everything like that. We're actually doing that all through the crane operator, switching them over and going and grabbing new material and being able to switch them on down to the barge.
Yeah, and then what? I'll piggyback off that, because then your change out operation, you eliminate the potential flash arc hazard swapping out, and then just general time. You're not having to involve any maintenance people. You're not having to stop operations. Most of those beams, you can swap out 30 seconds, 45 seconds, instead of waiting on your maintenance team to arrive, locking out, tagging out, doing what you need to do.
There's a lot of things that we're doing innovatively with our BTH group that goes towards no touch, right? So it's you hear a lot about no touch tools, which are, you know, the old push pull sticks and stuff like that. But we're actually getting into the BTH devices and everything to moving electrodes for the furnace, bunch of different scenarios like that. We're actually creating and designing ways to move those around without even having to get employee or involvement with it, right? They're not having to jump on forklifts and run around and do that. We're doing that with BTH devices. So
if someone's looking at a more traditional system, how much percentage would you say that they can look at an increase in price to make their systems a little bit safer
So again, there's an a la carte portion, you know what I mean? But you're probably to go into instead of doing a standard, if you look at it, doing it in a no touch type of way, probably 15 to 25% more is a good average, right? So like I said, it just depends, because some of these things,
stack it and,
some of these things are 100% customized one-off pieces, right? As to where others, we're taking our standard products and we're able to modify it a little bit through engineering, right? And here you go. But like I said, it really depends on what that product is.
If you had a piece of advice that you could give someone about budgeting safety into their projects, what would that piece of advice be?
Well, every customer that we talk to always says there's no budget for safety.
Yeah, but there is.
But
right?
There is.
But right? Everyone always says that until it's time to sign the check.
Until they get the pricing, right? So,
you know, I'm always someone that my first, you know, suggestion would be look at the data. Right? Let's go look at incidents or near misses and what component with that system did it involve. And if you have a clear cut highest percentage involved X component, then that would be where I would allocate my budget first, right? If you ask me to get specific with that, I would probably need to think about that for a minute. But if 50% of all my near misses or incidents come from up down on the hoist, then I'm going to find a way to allocate some part of my budget to purchase some type of no-touch piece of equipment in that situation. I'm always a proponent of let's look at the data and make the best decision on what we've got there, the information that's available to us. So,
and I look at it too, like Lance said, being around the industry for 30 years, it's been pretty consistent in steel mill operations. What's one of the top injuries that you're going to incur? Hands, fingers, pinch points. So the no touch is a motivation to eliminate that. That's always your venture to say that's probably every steel operation that you go look at their incidents, near misses, reported, recordables, the majority of them is going to be a touching situation, right? It's going to be reaching out, getting your hands where it shouldn't be. So we offer alternatives to that.
Is there a value per dollar on a specific system or something like that you would put at the top of your list of being like, hey, if you want the most value for your dollar, this is an easy, simple safety system that you can put in? Or
it goes back to application, right? So if you're talking about overhead cranes, just like what Lance said a minute ago, you know, if you've got up, down, and there's an issue with it, you know, hands crushed, whatever, you know, we're going to look at no touch stuff. If it's bridging or trawling, if it's traverse functions on a crane, right? There's audible alarms, there's light warnings, there's all kinds of stuff. They've even got lasers that project down on the floor now where the actual danger zone is for the load, right? So you can see exactly where the you need to stay out of, right? So again, it really goes to what type of application you're looking at.
With the evolution of the industry, right? It's so amazing to see the automation that's in the steel producer system itself. So you're trying to create and keep up with them, and it's a fluid situation always. And so you're chasing solutions. So it's always good to partner up with your steel producers and work together.
Just with our electrode handling right now, we have a complete no-touch system, and we've got one mill that's actually being built right now that they're leaning towards being one of the first automated steel mills, right? And that's actually pretty big, but they're wanting us to look at how can we, and if we, what we can do to fully automate our complete no-touch system for adding electrodes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To what Chris said, it's constantly changing. So there are products and methods and procedures and things that are continuing to be rolled out to make everything safer. But as hard as very smart people are working on to come up with those products and procedures, on the other side, production is working as hard as they can to do it faster and produce more.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to always go back. There are a whole lot of different products and things and systems that we would all love to talk to our customers about. But no matter what, I don't think that will ever be able to replace training and awareness. While we sell those products and have a lot of subject matter experts in all of those products, I just if you ask me that question every time today and 10 years from now, it's gonna be training.
I spoke to several of the vendors and producers today walking around here, and a lot of it comes back to how the inexperience that is in the industry now, how the turnover is. You've got guys at the end of their career, you've got a bunch of guys coming in that have never been around. I mean, it's like to Lance's point, the training becomes imperative. You have to take the time to train them and get them exposed to the proper way to do things.
Well, thanks guys for joining, I appreciate it. You can get a hold of Chris, Jim, Lance at MozillaCompanies.com. Or any of our other experts, check out our Learning Center. We have a ton of information there. You can watch Safety Factor wherever you listen to your podcast, or you can watch it on the Lifting Rigging channel on YouTube. Thanks for listening. Stay safe out there.